Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
That is not Justin Bieber, and I am not Jordana Green. Paul Douglas, Thursday afternoon. Thank you for dipping in and seeing what the heck's going on. DJ Dave Josephson producing the show this afternoon. DJ, I would imagine you're pretty bummed about these new recommendations from the Minnesota health officials, basically saying that Halloween is going to be anything but normal this year. They encourage all of us, every parent, to follow CDC guidelines for Halloween that discourage parties and candy handouts. It does permit no contact goodie bag giveaways and encourages alternatives such as virtual costume parties. Well, that sounds like fun. That sounds like fun. Come on, kids, come up and grab a bag and run. I mean, the joy, and I use that word loosely, is, you know, getting to compliment the kids on their costumes and hand out candy and see the neighbor kids and see the neighbors, too. But it sounds like you're not going to miss it too much.
Well, you know, I'm fine with Halloween, and I think there's a lot of different ways people celebrate it, with parties, and I know churches do different events, like ours does a trunk or treat where you go around the parking lot to different vehicles that are kind of dressed up and handing out candy. Specifically the trick or treating, to me, that's in the category of something that I think might be dead forever. Like, we might just find other ways to celebrate trick or treating or celebrate Halloween without trick or treating after COVID. And I am totally okay with that. Like, Halloween is fine, but the trick or treating thing, we do it. I think it's the right thing to turn the lights on and to hand out the candy. But to me, it's a little bit of a tired tradition. And if that stops here with COVID and we find a different way to celebrate, I am A-okay with that.
I'm a little ambivalent about Halloween. It's not my favorite. I mean, I love Christmas. I love Thanksgiving, 4th of July. What's not to to hate about any of those? But, yeah, Halloween, I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, to take my kids to a costume party someday and do pumpkin carving and have some apple cider and sit around a bonfire, whatever it might be, to me, that sounds like a better way to celebrate, you know, this holiday than to – you know, sit outside when it's cold and trade off which parent is going around with the kids and which one's staying home. It just feels tired to me.
But what about the dentists? What about all those cavities, right? I mean, dentists rely on all that candy creating new cavities that need fillings.
Yeah, dentists are kind of a scam too, don't you think?
Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm just kidding. I'll get in trouble for saying that.
Oh, I love my dentist.
Paul, what else? What else is in that category for you of things that might die because of COVID that maybe it's okay if they go away?
I mean, for me, at the top of the list, commutes. I do not miss sitting in traffic for 90 minutes a day.
Sure.
I just don't. I mean, that's time I can be doing other stuff. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's better for the environment, less pollution, less emissions. It's safer. I mean, I love to drive, but, you know, especially in the winter, not having to schlep back and forth lowers the odds of getting into an accident.
And maybe you'll commute once a week or to certain meetings you have to go to, but not as a regular thing.
When I have to. The one thing I hope sticks around after we return to normal, and there will be a return to normalcy, although I think it'll be a new normal. I don't think it's going to be the way it was in 2019. I hope telehealth sticks around. I had a physical, a virtual physical with my doctor on my computer. Loved that. It was fast. It was efficient. And home delivery. I think, you know, making my way through Costco, some people love that. I don't. I know exactly what we need. Mm-hmm. And I love the ability on Instacart,
Insta, yeah.
one of those Instas, to be able to order what I need. And there's less impulse spending, too, right? Yeah. So it I find it's a little cheaper, even with the tip and the delivery fee, to do home delivery. And I hope that sticks around for good.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, a couple things came to mind. I attended a training last night for a group at my church I'm a part of. And the, you know, it's a youth group, so we will be in person for a lot of our things. But the training we did, it was clear we were going to just do that virtually. So I was tuned into a virtual training last night while I had dinner and went for a walk and did the dishes. And I was able to fully tune into, okay, they're telling us about the different things that are new this year, blah, blah, blah. And I could participate in that training while I was doing other things. And to me, that's a win, that we've learned what things are really important to do in person. And things like, you know, a training where you got to go through a manual or a bunch of rules or whatever that is, like, I think those things are okay to do virtually. So I hope that, you know, trainings and things like that can stay virtual. Another thing is, like, obligatory handshakes. I think, so how many times have you been in a situation where you go, oh, I think I'm meeting this person, I don't know who they are, I think the right thing is to handshake, and do I, like, try to do the overpowering handshake or the weak handshake, and you don't know how to do it, and, you know, I hope we get back to the day where you can give somebody a hug, you can give your hug a friend when you see them, somebody you actually know, but maybe when we're in business meeting contexts, maybe it'll be something else that's the norm, and we can get away with, like, the awkward, I just met you handshake. I think I'm okay if that goes away forever.
When I meet a friend of a friend, a female, I never know. Now, is this hug worthy? Should I give this woman a hug?
Yeah.
A handshake seems kind of weird.
Yeah.
But now, you know, fist pumps, elbow pumps. Yeah, hopefully that sticks around. No more awkward moments.
Yeah, there'll be a new normal for all that stuff, I think.
Hey, California is banning the sale of new gas-powered cars by 2035. Some perspective on that. We talked to a local expert next. Paul, back with you. Happy Thursday afternoon. Yesterday, some shocking news. Maybe we should have expected it, because California tends to lead the nation on a lot of things when it comes to environmentalism and trying to do right by our environment. Yesterday, Governor Gavin Newsom, California governor, signed an executive order requiring all passenger cars sold in California to be zero emission vehicles by 2035. The transportation sector responsible for more than half the carbon pollution in California. Now, medium and heavy duty trucks get until 2045 to go green. Now, here's the deal. Gas powered cars won't be prohibited, and owners of gas powered vehicles will still be able to resell them. But new car sales will only be allowed if they are electric or net zero. I'm assuming hydrogen might be another option as well. With us to get some perspective, a little clarity on what this means, is VP of Transportation at the Great Plains Institute. Brendan Jordan joins us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Hey, Brendan.
How are you, Paul?
Great. I'm doing okay. How are you doing? I was surprised that Governor Newsom, now granted, they've had a maelstrom of crazy weather, the fires, the smoke. And I don't know if this is a tipping point. Does this feel like a tipping point to you?
Well, I do. It does feel like the timing suggests it's a direct response to, you know, what is it, you know, some clear signals of and impacts of climate change in California and the need to take some big steps.
Absolutely. And look, people say, well, you can't just point a finger at climate change. California, most of the West, is anywhere from 2 to 4 degrees warmer than back in the 1970s. It's drier, too. California has been in a perpetual drought for, I think, the last 12 years. So there are other factors. Forest management is one of the factors. Development, people living maybe where they shouldn't be living. But there's no denying that it's warmer and drier, and that is making the fires bigger, lasting longer, impacting more people, emitting more smoke into the atmosphere. I mean, the air quality index for much of the last few weeks has been off the scale. The smoke overhead right now, that hazy blue sky over Minnesota, is still the result of these western fires. Do you think this is a signal in the marketplace that other states will eventually adopt? California's just ahead of the curve?
That's a great question. We've seen a number of nations take the step of setting a date out into the future for, you know, complete phase out of the internal combustion engine. And this is the first U.S. state to take that step. There's a lot of analysis suggesting that at some point in the next perhaps 5 to 10 years, we'll hit a tipping point where electric vehicles in many applications become cheaper in terms of the upfront cost. Of course, they're already cheaper today in terms of the total cost of ownership, which is complicated, but, you know, the fuel's cheap, you know, 50 to a buck a gallon equivalent for electricity, and the maintenance is cheap. No oil changes, lower maintenance, but, you know, right now the batteries are expensive, but dropping rapidly in price as we scale up manufacturing. So, you know, at some point it's very likely that you do hit that inflection point, and what we have today is kind of steady growth, and you get a rapid, you know, turnover in the marketplace. And I think California is trying to anticipate that and get ahead of it. It's an executive order. It's not binding today, but it is, you know, a clear statement about the direction they see for the market and what they see coming in the future.
Can we just step back for a second and talk about electric vehicles? I've owned 38 cars since I turned 16, and I loved each and every one of them. Two of them have been electric vehicles. I mean, I'm noticing that, as you just alluded to, the maintenance costs are less, the insurance rates came down. I'm spending, I think, all in maybe $1 a gallon. Now, there's no place to put gasoline, but if you look at the energy consumption filling up your electric vehicle, it's about a third of the cost per mile that many gas-powered vehicles are. So, you know, this is not a, even take climate change out of it. And I tell people this is not about appeasing Al Gore. This is about saving money. And at some point, when the prices drop to a certain level, you'd be crazy not to at least consider an electric vehicle. My question to you, can we recycle those batteries? Is anybody doing that yet and doing it efficiently?
You know, that's a hot topic. We have some recent information on that up on the Drive Electric Minnesota website, actually, and it's Drive Electric Week, and they're actually one of the events that we are advertising on our events page focuses on that exact topic, mining and recycling related impacts. The battery, you know, this is a topic of great interest in figuring out how to source materials. There's a lot of different formulas and different combinations of minerals that go into batteries. So, you know, we got to figure out the way to source those materials in a way that's sustainable. And of course we have to recycle those batteries as well. And that's in development, but, the market's going to grow so rapidly that we're just going to have to solve it.
Well, the cost of energy storage, the cost of these batteries has dropped something like 75% in the last 7 years. So it seems like things are moving in the right direction. And I'm a big believer not in government mandates, but let the markets come up with the solutions we need. And if they can be cleaner and cheaper, it's a win-win for everybody. I mean, for me, it comes down a little bit to range anxiety. Many of these vehicles can go 300 miles between, you know, bigger batteries that maybe go 500, 600 miles and a denser network of electric charging stations. I mean, if every gas station also had, you know, electric options, to me, that would be a tipping point. And I see that happening, but it may not be going fast enough. I think electric vehicles are, what, 2% of the total transportation sector? But that number is rising pretty fast, right?
Yeah, it's probably, in terms of the actual vehicles on the road, it's closer to 1%. And you know, in some places, you know, you'd see 2% of sales. In places like California, it's 10%. In some of the Scandinavian countries, it's, you know, more than 60% of new vehicle sales. Oh, yeah, it's very high. I'm not sure I have that number exactly right.
Wow.
It's the majority of the new vehicle market is something with a plug, whether it's a plug-in hybrid or a pure battery electric.
Well, it's not for everybody, not yet. But again, if you have, you know, reasonable commutes, I would encourage people to at least look at the option of an electric vehicle. Give us the website again, Brendan, at Great Plains, where people can get more information comparing apples to apples.
Yeah, we help convene Drive Electric Minnesota, which is a statewide electric vehicle partnership. The website is driveelectricmn, pretty easy to remember, .org. And it is, we're heading into Drive Electric Week starting on Saturday. And so there's a great events page for anybody who wants to, you know, we all got to get creative during the pandemic and find no contact ways to get together. But there's a lot of great, very creative events and opportunities to learn more about electric vehicles.
Very cool. Brendan Jordan, Great Plains Institute, thank you for the perspective. Great to have you on, Brendan.
A pleasure as always, Paul. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you. And by the way, General Motors betting their future on electric. Every car manufacturer going electric, some faster than others. So it's not just Tesla, BMW, all of them. When we come back, the one and only Mike Max has some things to say about sports. And he's a one heck of an umpire, too. That's next.
Okay, that's that. Hustle in, hustle out. Ah! What do you throw? Fastball, curveball, slider, change?
My curveball's not looking good today.
You understand that if I find any illegal substance on the ball, I will throw him out, you out, and your grandparents out. I'll tell you guys about when I used to play the game.
We don't need that right now. It's fine.
Anybody? Does anybody want to hear about it?
Oh, that was not a pirate. That was Mike Max calling balls and strikes. Maxie, you made it sound fun, man.
It was fun. It's fun being with the kids. I haven't umpired in 32 years, and I had my gear already, and it was good to put it on again, and I forgot what made it fun, and what makes it fun is being at the ballpark and having coaches out there and players mm-hmm. out there, and you know, they're trying to get it right. And these are 14-year-olds, and so they're still learning, so you can teach them a few things. And, yeah, God, it's just, and then, of course, it doesn't hurt that there's a beautiful Minnesota night. So I umpired and did my volunteer umpire job last night, and I encourage anybody that likes that kind of activity to get into umpiring or refereeing, especially young people that can make some money and you know, learn some great life skills by navigating through and negotiating. If you can negotiate as an umpire and keep people calm, you got a skill in life. I think it's a great teaching tool for kids to learn how to do.
Absolutely. Did you get any dirty looks? Any kids mumbling because of missed calls, or was everybody respectful?
No. They're respectful. But what surprised me a little bit was I didn't have to call that many called strikes because these kids were swinging the bats when it was close, and that was good to see because what you hate is when they're up there and they're looking for a walk or something like that. But they were up there looking to hit the ball, and so if it was close, they were swinging at most of them, and I didn't have a lot of tough calls. Well, they tried the old hidden ball trick ball, St. Louis Park did, and the shortstop tagged out the runner, but the pitcher didn't realize that he couldn't be on the mound and on the rubber, and so instead it was a balk, and I had to explain that to him. But they were very attentive and nice kids. So it was really a lot of fun.
Hey, Maxie, I have to ask this question. Forgive me if it sounds stupid, but are umpires going the way of 8-track tapes and bell-bottom jeans? I mean, don't we have the technology to be able to, to tell instantaneously whether a ball is a strike or a ball?
Not. Yeah, I hope not. But the other part of it is that I realized last night, was it's not just that, but these guys are graded every game through a computer that tells them, you know, how many strikes they called right, et cetera. So they're graded right now based on a computer. And I thought about that last night because there are certain unwritten rules of the game, meaning if it's a blowout, in general, you open up the strike zone and everybody wants to, you know, go up there swinging and let's get this thing over. Well, with the computer, umpires can't do that anymore because their grade is going to be reflective on whether or not they got the ball or the strike right. And they can't use kind of some of those unwritten rules of baseball to get through a game and recognize the situation and some of that that is a part of the game. Because now it goes against your grade. Now, obviously not what I was doing last night, but it does matter. And so I hope it doesn't go the way of computers, but I'm starting to think it's only a matter of time before the balls and strikes are called on a computer and maybe the base umps they'll keep in there because they have replay and you're going to need somebody out there in case the computer malfunctions, I guess.
Right, that's true.
But I do think that, sadly, we're heading in that direction.
Max, you just got back from Tom Kelly's place. What's going on?
I did. Yeah, speaking of baseball, I went on and did a nice interview with him. We sat in his front yard and talked about it's just fun visiting with him. And, of course, I was covering them when they won in 87 and 91. So, you know, you have common experiences that you see. And we were just talking about some of that. You know, in 87, he said he won. And, you know, he's living in a condo in St. Paul. He didn't even know his neighbors knew him when he got home. And there was all this stuff around congratulating him. And, you know, it's just how lucky you are to have some memories like that. And I never said about, you know, he's not a big fan of this 60-game season, and you know, because it just the teams got wiped out so early that were out of contention, you couldn't play your way back in, and so it's just different. But he likes Mejia and Pineda at the top of the rotation, and what they can do with the baseball. I thought he might like Barrios more, but he likes those two in the playoffs. And we're just talking, you know, obviously it's different when you don't have the fans and the media won't be directly accessible to players or managers in the playoffs. But he said you could always tell the playoffs because the guys are so excited that they're showing up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon instead of 3 o'clock, and they just want to be at the ballpark. You just want to be a part of the experience, and you want to feel it, and that's so true. Once you get there, now again, it's different this year because you go in a bus and all that stuff. But that is what playoff baseball is at its very best, and when it's been here in the Twin Cities for sure.
Speaking of playoffs, big win last night, 7-6 over the Tigers. The Twins victorious, now first place in the AL Central. Chicago holds the tiebreaker. My sense is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that a top four seed and home field advantage for all three first round games is much more likely now than it was 2 days ago. Does that mean we don't have to play the Yankees?
Probably. Please. There's a lot of different things that could fall, you know, is how this will fall. Thad Levine, I think, told me today, the sixth and the eighth spot are spoken for. Houston and the eighth spot is going to be, maybe still to be determined, but it's going to be, you know, Seattle, one of those teams at the bottom. And everything else is up for grabs. So if you do, for whatever reason, the Twins have been very, very good at home. So it does mean probably a little bit more to them to play in Target Field. For whatever reason, they're comfortable there. And even without fans, even void of fans, it looks like that's worth playing for. The only thing you don't want to do is waste a pitcher this weekend to try to get there. And then all of a sudden you're stuck with, well, we wish we could throw so-and-so, but we don't have them available to us because they're not taking days off in this thing unless you sweep. So if the games play out, you could need all five starters in the first week. And that is that's pretty paramount. That's pretty important, even though you're going to have a longer bullpen because you have 28 guys in the postseason roster. You want to make sure that rotation is set up the way you want it. And for the Twins, certainly the first three pitchers would be Barrios, Mejia, and Pineda in some order. But that becomes pretty important right now.
Hey, Maxie, do we have an update on Nelson Cruz and his knee? I know he's out with a sore knee.
The only thing, Thad just said that he doesn't find it to be terribly problematic. So I assume they anticipate him back this weekend for the Reds. He didn't go that far as to say it's a specific day, but certainly he sounded comfortable that Nelson was going to be available to him for the rest of the year.
Okay. Hey, stick around. Let's talk Vikings when we come back next. Paul Douglas back with you Thursday afternoon. The Vikes taking on the Titans high noon on Sunday. And Maxie, I just want to run something past you and get your visceral reaction. A lot of people piling on Kirk Cousins would not want to be in charge of Kirk's social media account right now. Chad Graff at The Athletic said, among other things, if the Vikes cut Cousins before March 22nd, they would incur a $41 million cost in dead cap while saving only $10 million. If they cut Kirk Cousins the following offseason, they'd incur $10 million in dead cap while saving $35 million. That's much more manageable, his words. Do you think it's premature to be writing off Kirk Cousins based on two games?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, he takes the blame, but he's I don't see him doing anything that he hasn't done last year. I mean, he goes back to pass. He tries to get the ball to the open guy. There aren't as many open guys. Maybe he needs to force the ball. The interceptions are sometimes a product of, we got to get something going here, and I got to take a chance. I got to take a shot here. And so, therefore, you can't lay that on him. I think he's just fine. That'd be the, if I was going to rank the Vikings' concerns, Cousins would be about sixth on the list. Okay. Defensive line, linebacker now without Anthony Barr, defensive backs, there's your first three. Then you go to offensive line, that's your fourth concern. Wide receivers, in fact, there's no one really developed to go with Adam Thielen, there's your fifth concern. Then I'd get to Kirk Cousins, and even then I'm not sure that I'd put him at six. That's just, you know, that's always the knee-jerk, easy reaction. Just look at the quarterback, blame it on the quarterback, blame it on the coach. But if you break down the way he's played and the pressure that he gets. Now, the one thing that he doesn't have, and I don't know if he can develop it or not, even though Fran Tarkenton, Fran Tarkenton lives down in Atlanta, and that's where Kirk Cousins' in-laws live, and he spends a fair amount of his time in the off-season down there because his wife's from there. Fran has this great big office. He's got the whole floor, and I was down there last year visiting Fran, doing a story with him, and Kirk goes by there once in a while, and they talk football, and Fran advised him to extend plays more, meaning scramble more, buy more time, you can make more plays if you, and I don't know that Kirk can do that. He's not slow, but he doesn't seem to be the kind of quarterback that can really extend plays and make something happen on his own like Fran Tarkenton could or other quarterbacks. So that might be a downside of his, given the fact that you've got a bad offensive line or at least disjointed right now, that he can't compensate for that by buying time the way Tarkenton could. So I'm not sure that he can get you over that hump if you don't have a good offensive line, but if he gets time, he's just fine.
So it's simplistic to lay all this at the feet of Kirk
Cousins. Oh, okay. Him and Mike Zimmer, just throw it there. I mean, I've seen this so many times, but football is a complicated game. And, I was telling you yesterday, I sat with Bud Grant on his porch yesterday, and we sat and visited. And so, yeah, Bud Grant and Tom Kelly, that's a lot of wisdom that came my way in the last couple of days. They're just sitting in their front porches. But, you know, football is a complicated game that people try to make simple. And it doesn't do you any good to try to explain all the nuances or how one part affects the other because fans don't want to hear it. So you just kind of allow them to go there. And, you know, Kirk Cousins is getting $33 million. So, okay, have at, you know.
But what about Trevor Lawrence? I mean, if the Vikes keep losing, maybe we have a shot at Trevor Lawrence.
Well, I hate to see that two games into the season, though, that becomes a discussion, you know. And I know that that'll be the cry for any team that's sitting down there in the lower part of this thing. You know, he'll be the caveat, the one that everybody wants. But, I hope after two games people haven't resigned themselves to that so far.
I have to say, though, watching the NFL and watching college football with the piped-in crowd noise, especially when they take the 50-yard line shot looking down, you can almost imagine that we live in normal times. And then they go to the end zone shots, and you can see the empty stands, and they say, oh, yeah, okay, it's 2020. Yeah. But I'm just happy there's any football, Mikey.
Yeah, and when you get caught up in the flow of a game, I mean, like the other night, Seattle's playing New England, and it is just a wonderful game. Russell Wilson's playing well. Cam Newton's playing well. Cam gets his chance to the last drive, and you're kind of going, okay, you got Tom Brady's team now. Can you do what Tom did? And he gets him down to the 3-yard line with a chance. It's do or die the last play, and he gets stopped. And I completely forgot, for about 15 minutes there, that there was nobody in the stands. Because you're watching the play, you're watching the replay, you're going, oh, why don't they spike it? What are they going to do now? And you get caught up in all the things that you get caught up in a normal game. And it was really fun, and it reminded you. And last week, I think there were 3 or 4 games decided on the last play or close to. And during those times, you really do forget that there's nobody in the stands.
Sports to the Max with the one and only Mike Max at 6:30. What's coming up, Mikey?
I did the noon to three for Chad today.
Oh.
And then Dee Lee has got the big bash coming up tonight.
That's right.
Money for
That's the Masonic
patio, for the patio there at the Masonic Children's Hospital. So lots of fun stuff coming up at 6:30, but I've already done my tenure.
You should make an appearance with Dave Lee. That would make him happy and make you happy and make a lot of kids happy.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to get in line because I've seen the lineup for that thing, and I'd be way back compared to the frontliners he's got.
Brain fart, yeah. And we'll have more on Dave's Backyard Bash coming up at 5:07. We absolutely want to talk about that. Mikey, thank you so much. Appreciate your perspective, and you got to put on makeup now, right?
Yeah, I'm putting it on right now, but it's so beautiful outside, Paul. God, is it gorgeous.
I know.
And sitting in the front yard, TK, I just didn't want to leave, you know, because we're telling baseball stories and listening, and it was just a lot of fun.
I miss a lot of things about TV. I don't miss the makeup.
Yeah, and you should, shouldn't. Although, you don't wear it anymore, do you, at all?
Well, sometimes late on a Saturday night.
All right.
If I want to feel good about
our
myself.
Our secret.
Is this going on the air? Thanks, Mikey. More on Dave Lee's Backyard Bash next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.